you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member, you'll know a thing or two about an expertly packed capsule wardrobe that balances business and leisure. So you can go from conference sleek to cocktail party chic with a few new accessories. You can hustle from 9 to 5 before exploring with ease from 5 to 9. Because you're the chief excursion officer. The Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card. If you travel, you know. Learn more at go.amex/business.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hi, Brittany and Eric here.
We are here.
We just want to take a second to, like, say something really important.
Really important.
So we had our live show.
Yes.
And it was great.
So much fun. And we had some very special people in the audience from the Park Avenue Armory Youth Corps, which is like a group of high school aged interns who get paid to, like, help out with the arts and also, like, explore all that the arts can offer.
Yes. And this summer, they are producing a podcast.
Yes.
And we went and sat and talked with them.
Yes.
Not too long ago. And I was blown away.
I had such an amazing time.
I had an awesome time. This is such a cool group of kids. They're learning a lot, really interested in, like, all the details of the project they're trying to produce.
Mm-hmm.
And we learned a lot, too. It was just really inspiring to sit around a lot of kids who are working to create this type of product and want to learn more about, like, art and podcasting and, like, the intersection of, like, how you create art and who consumes it.
I learned a lot. I kind of don't even like this word, but, like, they had the most decorum of any yeah. people that, like, I had met for the first time recently. So they had a ton of great questions for us. They were great at answering our questions. They gave us, like, a few of them gave us a tour of the building, which yeah. If you live in New York and, like us, you have never been, well, up until, like, you know, recently, you've never been to the Park Avenue Armory. It is an amazing space.
You have to go.
Yeah, and, like, and the program that they have there with the Youth Corps is incredible.
So we really wanted to just say thank you to them.
Yes.
For not only supporting our live show, but for inviting us out and for just really helping to remind us how big the community of podcasting is.
Yes.
And who all is listening. And we are so thankful that that group includes the Park Ave Armory Youth Corps.
Yes. So thank you guys so much. And we can't wait to hear what you guys come up with.
Yes. Hopefully you'll share.
Yes.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Hi, I'm Eric.
And I'm Brittany.
And we are...
We're colored nerds.
The conversations that black people have...
When white people aren't in the room.
But we record them.
And we put them on the internet.
Today is going to be a little different.
Today is going to be a little different.
We're not going to waste too much time telling you about all the things that are not going on in our lives.
Yeah. We're going to give you somewhat of, like, a break from that.
Yes.
But in the first half of today's show, we are going to talk about a little bit of self-care.
Yes. Which is much needed for everyone.
Yeah, much. These days,
even
shit.
For us. Considering the fact that we have nothing going on.
I got number stress. And then the second half of the show, we are going to actually get out of the studio and we're going to take a little For Color Nerds field trip.
Yes, it's been so long / first time.
I was going to say, I'm like, we've never actually taken a field trip. So, Eric, recently I posed a question to you. And, you know, before I get to the question, I want to get into why I asked you the question.
Okay.
So, Eric, this has been, like, to me, maybe the shittiest summer. Not just, like, even news cycle and, like, all of this, like, tragic and traumatic and depressing news, just with black men dying, black women dying, black trans women dying, queer people and queer people of color having their spaces invaded in Orlando. Like, it's just been really fucking shitty. And then you add to all of that the ridiculous circus that has been the election.
Yeah.
And it kind of, like, can be just really tiring to be a black person in the world for the past few months. It's been kind of tough. So what I asked you is, what have you been doing to stay sane this summer?
one, I totally agree. The summer has just been taxing, like, yeah, in a way that I, like, honestly, I can't really process. But I would have to say the thing that I have done this summer that I haven't done most summers that has really, really kind of, like, helped and saved me has honestly been reading again, like reading books specifically. I've been reading books in a way that I haven't for a long time. Like, we're article people.
Yes.
I think it's safe to say.
Yes.
I mean, that's how the show got started. We were passing articles, yeah, back and forth and talking about it. And not that I love books, but I never quite had the dedication, uh-huh, to sit with a book for any given amount of time to get through it. But three books this summer really, like, put me on my ass, took me away, forced me to think about other things and make new connections, yeah, that I really appreciate. So the first one is White Girls by Hilton Ahls.
Oh, yeah. I meant to read that. I haven't read that one yet.
Yeah. So we talked about it very briefly. I can't remember which episode. I think it was a Lemonade episode.
Yeah, it was a Lemonade, yes, episode.
Hilton Ahls is a writer for The New Yorker.
Yes.
And he is amazing. He's a culture writer.
Mm-hmm. Black man.
Yes. A black queer man.
Mm-hmm.
And his ability to weave together, like, culture and racial narratives and sexual narratives, too, is, like, just profound. Like, mm-hmm, I was talking to some people, like, I'm in a book club, and someone suggested the book, and, you know, we try to read something in a month. And I was like, I'm going to be honest with you. It's White Girls is a collection of essays,
mm-hmm,
and it is tough to get through, not in the way that the writing challenges you,
mm-hmm,
in a way that, honestly, I haven't been challenged before, mm-hmm, at least not recently. Like, it's the type of book, like, everything feels artful, but it's also, you have to figure out how you're supposed to interpret it.
Yeah.
And so I read a lot of paragraphs over and over and over again to, mm-hmm, just be like, what am I supposed to be taking away from this? Like, what am I supposed to understand? In addition, his positions are not easily drawn conclusions, in the sense that it's not something, it's safe to say I wouldn't have come to any of these on my own.
Yeah.
For example, he challenges our notions of Malcolm X in a way that I honestly haven't been faced with before. I don't want to spoil it, but I know that's, like, really vague,
uh-huh,
but he forces you to take another look at Malcolm X and his relationship with his mother.
Interesting.
And I've never, frankly, been confronted with that.
Yeah.
And it made me be like, well, damn, I can't find the lie. So, yeah, anyway, I don't quite agree with everything, but it's one of those books that you're like, I can't argue with you because you've clearly done the work.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I respect that. And it's one of those books that, like, again, I really, really recommend. It stretched my brain.
Mm-hmm.
So quickly, the other two. Invisible Man Got the Whole World Watching.
Oh, Michael Denzel Smith.
Yes. Excellent book. Very much, like, it's a memoir that I think expands itself beyond his particular narrative. It basically uses the narrative of a lot of the events that we know, you know, like the election of Barack Obama,
uh-huh,
the Jenna Six,
uh-huh,
kind of situation. Like, it uses all those things. He weaves them together within his own personal memoir. And it's just really, really well done. And as a black man who's went on a journey,
I can attest.
It was really great. Like, reading it, I was like, wow, he went on a similar journey, and I could really identify with that. He challenged himself, you know, in the book. He doesn't necessarily paint himself in the best light,
mm-hmm,
initially, but he shows his growth, and it's excellent. Great read. Not that long either. The last book, uh-huh, which was also great, which you also read.
What is it?
Is The Mothers.
Oh, my God, The Mothers.
By Britt Bennett.
Oh.
And, like, fuck, man, it's a quick read. It hasn't come out yet. It will be out
in October.
October.
From Riverhead Books.
Yes. Early October, Riverhead Books, The Mothers. It's kind of like a soap.
Yeah. I was going to say, it takes a lot of the best elements from, like, Dawson's Creek.
Yeah.
With, like, this really gorgeous writing.
Yes.
And, like,
every page just has at least a line or two that you're like, wow, that was beautiful. You,
yeah,
know what I'm saying? Like, and it's not necessarily like this profound declaration, but it's something like when you read it, you're like, the way this was strung together makes me feel something,
mm-hmm,
that's nice.
Yeah.
And I just really, really enjoyed it. It was probably of the three books I've named, it's the lightest in terms of like the content, even though it's a drama.
Yeah.
Like it's definitely a drama, but it's one of those things like you read it and even though it's taking you through this kind of emotional journey, you kind of feel good at the end.
Yeah. Well, I liked it because like it's the protagonist is a 17-year-old black girl basically set in like the present day. Mm-hmm. But like she wasn't like just like this big like mishmash of like walking mistakes.
Yes.
She also wasn't like this very like cookie cutter by the book. She had a rich inner life. She was very smart. There's another young female protagonist too. And it was just like they were provided with such like amazing minds.
Yeah.
That like I read it and I was like, this is what it's like. Like this is how it felt. Like
yeah.
This is
familiar.
Yes, it felt so familiar. And I had just never really seen like adolescent black women rendered so clearly in this sense. I mean, that could have also to do with the fact that like the author is 25.
Yeah. First book.
Oh my God. She knocked it out of the park. The writing is unbelievable. She put into words some stuff that I didn't even know how to process.
Yeah. So, I mean, really, really quick, because we haven't really talked about the story,
mm-hmm.
But it's about this girl who you mentioned.
Nadia.
And kind of her journey through life in relation to two of her friends.
Yeah.
And, you know, how we come in and out of each other's lives
and
intersect. And it's I don't want to say too much more about it because you need to read it.
Yeah.
But it's an excellent book and I think it's probably going to do really well.
I think it's going to do really well. And she deserves like all the things for it.
Yeah. So, like those three books really have carried me through this summer in a way that like I can't explain.
I can definitely attest on the mothers. And I do play. Actually, I was about to order Invisible Man, Got the Whole World Watching. But sure. I am going to borrow your copy. because the budget bees like that right now. So what's been keeping me sane this summer, I don't know if everybody knows this, but everybody, at least in my actual life, and definitely my therapist knows this, boundaries are like my least, like I, not a lot of strong development up until recently in my life. And like I'm finding that more and more demands are put on me from my personal life and from work. I've had a lot of really good opportunities, and with a lot of great opportunity comes like a lot of shit that you have to do. It takes a lot out of you.
Yeah.
And then add to that, like, I don't know, life ain't no crystal stair because I'm a black woman. Like, I'm really fucking tired. And like in this way that like it doesn't matter if I sleep 7 or 8 hours a night, like I'm tired. And I just honestly hit like a wall as far as just like energy wise, creatively. And I've learned that like there's this tool that I think like I know a lot of men use, like of all walks of life, and that definitely also a lot of white people use, which is just fucking saying that you're not going to do some shit. Just saying that you're not going to do some shit. Just letting somebody know that, like, you know, I mean, Oprah, I know, has said it, and all these other people are always like, no is a complete sentence. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But just sort of like really figuring out the ways in my life in which like I'm showing up for other people or taking on more than I need to. And just fucking being like, I'm not going to do that, or I can't do that, or I won't be able to make it that day, or that time doesn't work for me, or these are the days that I can actually be present. And then like the other 3, 4, 5 days of the week, I don't really know if I can help you out. Or even just being like, you know, the next 2 weeks, regardless of whether or not I have a lot of work to do, I'm fucking exhausted and I have shit that I need to do to take care of myself. So basically just like saying no, setting up boundaries. And this is the real major key that I used to think I didn't have access to, not working.
Mm.
So I go to work, obviously, you see me there every damn day. Mm. And sometimes I'm still working very early in the morning or later in the evening. And obviously you and I are here right now on a weekend.
Yeah.
But I have really learned that like, there's never a point where like you can like inbox zero is a great concept. Inbox zero, for those of you guys who don't know, is like when you have
no new emails
in your inbox.
And you work to that like every day.
Yeah. And like inbox zero is great, but it's also just like, to me, it's like, it's not real. Whatever bullshit you're dealing with, it's probably ongoing. Whatever conversations you're having are going to continue on for the next month or so. Like whatever's stressing you out is not about to disappear at any point in the future. So like just taking a pause, like I used to think like, oh, I need to have like an 8-day vacation and I need to like turn off my phone and stay away from everybody. But I found over the summer that like sometimes like you need half a day Or sometimes you need to have like a day over the weekend where like you are not answering emails, you are not having text conversations, phone conversations with anybody about work. Like you are not going to talk about it. You're not going to really think about it. I used to over the weekend like try to tinker with things and like listen to stuff and edit or whatever. And now it's just sort of like, no, if I don't give myself this time to deal with whatever's happening work-wise in my life or emotionally in my life, or just like even just doing the basic shit that I need to do to be a human, like the stuff that I'm sure that you probably like neglect to do for yourself because you're doing them for another person, like eat, sleep, clean up after myself, make sure that I have enough toilet paper. Like I've really learned that, like, and I'm really trying to focus in the second half of the year, working is not always the answer.
Yeah.
And that, like, things that I have to do for myself are as important, if not more important, than anything else that I have to, like, deal with in life. I found that, like, on days that something happens to a Black person where they die or get shot or someone's sacred space is invaded by a mass shooter, I'll leave work at 5 o'clock. Like, yeah. I'll leave work as soon as, like, physically, humanly possible. Could I probably get another hour or two done? Yeah. Could I come back early in the morning? Yeah. But, like, ultimately, like, what are those hours going to be like? How am I going to feel? Probably pretty fucking shitty. And maybe not everybody has the freedom to take that, like, on, like, you know, a Wednesday to, like, leave work at 5 o'clock. But, like, I'm realizing that, like, now and also at previous points in my life where I was working much more difficult hours with much more difficult people, making much less money, and I had fewer resources, period, that I always had that time. I just, like, didn't think that I was worth taking it. So that's what's been keeping me sane this summer, just actually, like, saying no and, like, actually carving out and protecting time to do absolutely motherfucking nothing.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. It's something I try to push you in terms of the boundaries.
You've been trying to push me to do this for years.
Yeah. And honestly, it's been great to see you do that. Because, I give you a lot of shit just because that's
what
the default.
You do? Yeah.
But, you know, it's nice to see you come back and be like, I actually feel pretty good. You know, like we've had quite a few of those conversations, whether it be, you know, this summer or just this past year, I think.
Yeah.
And it's great. It's great. Like, usually I give you shit in response to those direct moments because I'm usually not having that day. But it's nice to know that you are having that. So I'm happy that you found that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it looks different for everybody. For some people, it's going to be like they're going to take a 2-hour nap.
Yeah.
Some people, they're going to play with their kids. You know what I'm saying? Some people, and sometimes this is definitely me, like, you just are looking forward to, like, moving all your furniture around and sweeping everything and, like, you know, like, dropping some shit off at Goodwill. Whatever it is, like, just to, like, take time to just, like, either get your shit together or just, like, allow yourself time to, like, relax and bask in your own funk if you need to, or your own laziness or your own happiness. Like, take it, because, like, the world will always be waiting with a fresh batch of bullshit for you
to deal with.
Exactly. Yeah. As soon as you're done. So that's what's been helping us stay sane this summer. I'm really curious to find out about what you guys have been doing because, you know what I'm saying, the season is about to change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Share that with us.
Share that with us.
So I think this is actually a good spot to take a break.
I would agree. So we will be back in a moment after some words from our sponsors. But when we get back, we're going to bust out.
Something new.
Something new.
We're going to get free.
We're going to get free.
All right.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
If your child is struggling in school, then IXL is right for your family. IXL is an online learning program for kids that covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. Backed by research, kids using IXL are scoring higher on tests. It's no wonder it's used in 95% of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Plus, a month of IXL costs less than an hour of tutoring. Get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when you sign up today at IXL.com/20. Visit IXL.com/20 to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
Welcome back.
So before we actually go on the field trip, I have something to share that's actually connected to, you know, our field exploration.
So there's a reason why we're
going. There's a reason why we decided to go out of
the studio.
I was gonna say out of the studio, out of office.
Out of office.
Out of town.
Yeah.
We didn't go out of town. We left the borough though. So I think I probably mentioned this before, but I minored in art history at Howard, which is hilarious because other than podcasting, and whether or not podcasting is art is debatable. Other than podcasting, I have no real artistic talent. But, you know, those classes that I took on Romare Bearden and German Expressionism and contemporary art, they were some of my favorite classes in all of college. And honestly, they were some of the only classes that I regularly attended. And so after I graduated, I was always looking for ways to stay up on what was happening in art, specifically contemporary art. And that curiosity eventually led me to the Black Contemporary Art Tumblr, which is run by Kim Drew. Really quickly, Kim is the social media manager for the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York. And she came on for Colored Nerds about a year ago to talk about her blog and what it means to be a young Black woman in the art world. You remember?
It's really, really important to me, too, like to share with people that an access to what you like to do is something that you absolutely deserve and something that you absolutely should feel value in working towards. Mm-hmm. Because why not? I think for a lot of people, there's this limitation on kind of like chasing what you want. But you should do it. I mean, why not? And there's a lot of ways to do it that aren't like, you know, drop everything and go after it. But find the ways that you can chase what you want within mm-hmm. the sustainable framework of your life. Mm-hmm. And that's all that I've done. And that has gotten me to this point.
So since I talked to Kim last year, I've been following her and other young Black women in the arts pretty closely on social media. Back in July, I noticed that a few of the people that I follow kept posting photos of events at this like really cool art gallery looking space in downtown Manhattan called the Black Art Incubator. So I heard incubator and I'm like, what? Because like an incubator to me is like one of those like corporate words that I associate with like a place where like entrepreneurs, you know, come and they sit in a round table and they talk and they try to like figure out ways to grow their businesses. But I had no idea what like an art incubator could be like. So another thing that caught my attention was that the photos that I kept seeing on Instagram, the photos that these people were sharing, they didn't feature any actual art. I mean, it definitely looked like they were in a gallery space. Like I saw a big white room with lots of light and there were a lot of plants, you know, some furniture, some really cool people like Thelma Golden, the director of the Studio Museum in Harlem. She was there. But there was nothing that actually appeared to be like on display. And there was this one photo. It was taken by King Texas, who's like one of my favorite photographers. But I kept seeing this photo of the four young Black women who were behind the whole thing. And one of them ended up being Kim.
Hi, my name is Kim Drew. Around the internet, I'm known as Museum Mammy. And I work full time at the Met doing the museum social media. And then outside of that, I work on a blog called Black Contemporary Art and work on independent curatorial projects.
Hi, I'm Jessica Bell Brown. I'm an art historian at Princeton.
So just to note, one woman who was in that popular photo, but who isn't in this conversation is Taylor Aldridge. She's a co-founder of the Black Art Incubator, and she's also an arts administrator in her hometown of Detroit, Michigan. Stand up. And she is co-editor at Arts.Black, which is an online journal for art criticism. And she also, just like you and me, Eric, she went to Howard University. But sadly, Taylor was not in town for our sit-down, so you're not going to hear her voice. So the story of this like remarkable art space that I kept seeing all over my Instagram feed actually starts with the day that Kim decided to apply for a residency program at an artist workspace and gallery called Recess. So she wanted to use the 35-day-long fellowship to help address the lack of inclusivity that can exist in a lot of art spaces. Well, a lot of spaces in general.
Yeah, that's like every space.
Exactly, like every space. So when she was preparing to apply for this fellowship, her first pick for a collaborator was a no-brainer. She decided upon writer and actually Taylor's partner at Arts.Black, Jessica Lynn.
Last winter, Kim and I were having dinner and drinks at Black Swan and just thinking about like what it meant to be young, female-identified Black women working in the arts. And so Kim asked, like, hey, are you interested in like working on a collaborative project at Recess? Let's loop Jessica and Taylor in. And we got on a Google document maybe 2 days later and just started plugging away.
So the four women set about assessing the needs of their community and how they could address them with a residency at Recess. You know, the art world as we know it is pretty siloed. Like you have the galleries and museums, you have art critics, arts foundations that provide grants. And it's not really always clear to the artist how these components work together. Kim, Jessica, and Taylor hope that by taking over the Recess space for 35 days and using it as a place for public education, they could help to connect some of those dots. Here's Jessica Lynn again.
Immediately, we recognized that a really fantastic way to do that would to be to organize a series of workshops and sessions and inviting in the people that we respect, the people that we've learned from, people that we call friends and colleagues to help us get this thing off the ground.
That idea to take an artist workspace and open it up to the community as an educational and collaborative space, that's what helped them secure the residency at Recess. And so during their 35-day stay, during July and August, they created nearly 30 free programs.
Wow.
I know, isn't that a lot?
Yeah, it's crazy.
I know. It's like literally almost like one for every single day. But yeah, and they were all focused on enriching the lives and like the practices of Black artists, and they were all open to the public. And you know, I mean, they did all this different stuff. Like they held regular talks with major figures in the New York art world. They led yoga and meditation sessions to address the importance of self-care. Self-care, very important. Shout out to the first half of the show. You know, they even organized a book swap and they closed the whole thing with a potluck. You know, in the traditional sense, no art was made. You know what I'm saying? You didn't walk away with, like, the Mona Lisa.
Yeah.
Right. But the goal of these four women wasn't really to create a physical, static work of art to hang on a wall or to put on a pedestal. It was to use conversation and education and an exchange of ideas to leave an indelible mark on their community. And they decided to name the project the Black Art Incubator.
Hmm.
It's kind of to the point, right?
Yeah. Straightforward.
Straightforward. Leaves nothing to the imagination. So actually, the Black Art Incubator's programming was centered around four core elements.
So the incubator is rooted in four core kind of components. Mm-hmm. The art and money workshops, where we've had folks like artists Dred Scott think through marketing strategies for artists, grant and residency application strategies. The second component is the archival practice workshop. We've had Sir Rodney Sir, who's really important figure in the New York art scene in the late 70s, early 80s, really important Black queer artist who's a fantastic archivist himself. Our third component is the Open Crypt, which is designed to bring or offer the formal feedback setting that you might find in a university, for example, to a different type of public, and even in some instances extend that for artists who find themselves in the world still in need and still hungry for that space, but not necessarily knowing where to go to get that. And then lastly, we've had the office hours, which is a component not necessarily unlike the Open Crit, but a little more formally invested in conversations around professional practices that art administrators may be wrestling with. And so we've had folks like Shido Project Patty from MoMA come in and lead a session.
So here comes the field trip part.
Yes.
Yes. So one day last month in August, Eric and I actually got a chance to see the space.
Yes, it was amazing.
It was amazing. It was like, it was filled with all this like simple, like modular furniture that you could like move around in all these different ways. And on the day we were there, it had been arranged kind of like a small classroom where you had one long table that was surrounded by a bunch of chairs. And then there were a few more chairs kind of throughout the room to accommodate for like people who came in late or overflow. And on the day we were there, like, you know, the place is pretty full.
Yeah, it was packed.
Yeah. And in every single chair in the room sat like a young artist type of person. And basically meaning people who appear to be much cooler than Eric or I.
Well, speak for yourself.
But one of the coolest things is that almost everybody there who self-identified as an artist was Black. So Eric and I got to sit in on one of the art and money talks. So like the art and money component of the Black Art Incubator was the brainchild of Kim and Taylor. And they wanted to connect seasoned artists and financial gatekeepers with younger, like less experienced artists to really break down the more logistical aspects of making art, like how to protect your content, how to apply for grants, and how to market your work as an artist. So the session that we attended was led by Larry Osei-Mensa. Larry is an independent curator, and he's also the co-founder of Art Noir, which is a global arts organization. And he talked about how to navigate the social side of the art world.
So it's like, how do you leverage the collective power that's present within your immediate network, within your extended network, to create opportunities, visibility, and actualize the goals that you have as an individual and as an artist?
So the session covered four facets of any artist's career: artistic practice, brand development, relationship management, and professionalism and likability, which were like not really things that I necessarily knew that you really needed to think about as an artist.
Yeah, it's not on a typical syllabus.
No, not on a typical syllabus. And Larry started the session by having participants pair off in twos and then ask their respective partners a deceptively simple question. How do you describe your art?
This is a hard thing to do with cameras and microphones, because I'm still kind of figuring that out. I've been doing... a lot of design work and working for a lot of clients, and like painting in very abstract ways and trying to connect what I've been doing creatively to the things I've been thinking about and not finding forms for.
Paint paintings?
It's what I've always done, so habit, but I don't know if that's a good reason, or if I'm trying to find a way to break apart what that means. So I'm like trying a lot of things that like break every piece of that, and like trying to figure out what pieces need to stay and what can go.
Yeah. I think that's interesting to think about the pieces of a painting.
Yeah.
And like what realities are created around a painting, and like how it functions.
Yeah.
In space. Painting isn't dead.
I don't think so.
So that's Zach Johnson and Rin Johnson. No relation, although Eric thinks that they might be cousins.
We're all cousins. The diaspora. It's real.
Anyway, after getting participants like Zach and Rin to think critically about their identities as artists, Larry schooled us all on how, like, a shrewd business sense is a career necessity for any artist. His session actually lasted about 2 hours. And it was so detailed that, like, everyone in attendance, myself and Eric included, had to, like, open up a notebook and sit down and take, like, careful notes.
We're sitting there getting a word.
We were getting a word. It was like being in school again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But, like, a good class.
A good class, exactly. One that I wouldn't skip. So, like, Eric and I, we are not visual artists.
True.
Yeah. But we each got a lot out of Larry's presentation. I mean, it directly concerned the art world, sure, but it really spoke to just the difficulty and the opportunity of being a young Black creative person of any kind. You know, his presentation was real, it was informative, and he didn't skimp on any detail, obviously, as evidenced by all the notes that we took. But, you know, it wasn't really the kind of information that you ever see given away for free. And Larry pointed that out as one of the most important benefits of the Black Art Incubator.
And it's just been amazing to see the various folks who've come through within the last month and just, you know, one, give their time, two, give their resources and insight, and all very generously, you know, because I think it's particularly within the art world, people aren't as generous and forthcoming about what they know.
But Larry was willing to share, and it's information that he could easily be getting paid for. Before presenting at the Black Art Incubator, Larry had taught this session as a part of a course at the School for Visual Arts, which is an art and design college in New York. We asked him why it was important. We asked him why it was so important to recreate this type of session at the Black Art Incubator.
Because I really believe in the work that the ladies are doing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important work. It's essential to take this conversation out of just a traditional institutional context,
mm-hmm.
taking it out of the classroom, but still trying to give you those essential elements and nuggets. And I also think, you know, there's something to be said about engaging in these conversations in a safe space, right?
Mm.
Where there isn't going to be judgment, and you know that the information is being shared from a point of love and compassion,
yeah.
and empathy, with the desire to give you the tools to actualize whatever the goals are for yourself.
After the session, we wanted to know more about what exactly brings young Black artists like Rin to the Black Art Incubator. Rin's story really drove home one of the biggest benefits of a program like this, increasing access.
I just got back from Bard doing my first year in the sculpture program to get my MFA. So this is like one of the first of these things that I was able to come to. But yeah, that's what brought me here. But of course, I have a lot to learn because I am a young artist. And so this is kind of a really amazing way to get a lot of free information that they teach us at graduate school, but also are sometimes hesitant to teach us at graduate school. So it's like kind of a nice, very straightforward way of demystifying some of the things that are present in the art world.
What do you mean when you say hesitant to teach you?
I just mean that, like, I think that art graduate schools historically are like meant to be practice based and practice focused, and so their job with us is to make our work as strong as possible. It's not necessarily like considered their job historically to teach us how to network or teach us how to write a grant proposal. Within my graduate school, there's kind of different splinter factions. Like, some people are like, yeah, 100% we're going to teach you how to write a grant proposal. And other professors are kind of like, maybe that's not necessary. But I think both of those spaces are valid. But it's also, too, a question for me to be like, well, I want this information. I'm going to go try and find it. And the incubator has made it very easy to access a lot of that information.
Beyond access, there was a deeper reason that Rin was here, one that a lot of us can identify with.
This environment feels really amazing because there's a lot of Black people here, frankly. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people of color here, and it feels wonderful because at school I definitely felt in the minority, and I am in the minority, and in fact our class is like called the most diverse class ever, and that's great, I think, but there's definitely some moments of isolation there, and here I don't feel like, oh, like there's the Black kid like doing the Black kid thing. Like,
yeah.
It's definitely more like a frank conversation about like what is relevant to me actually as a young Black artist, and like what do I need to know to like move forward in these spaces that are predominantly white.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like a really cool thing. It's definitely way more comfortable.
And Rin's feeling of comfort in what was described as a safe space is exactly what Kim, Jessica, and Taylor were shooting for with the Black Art Incubator. They wanted to make room for those who don't often get a seat at the table. But creating that safe space wasn't without its challenges. Here's Kim.
Every time that we would explain it to someone and someone would say, we don't know what you're doing, like being going through that work and understanding that there's something that's worth continuing to push forward, especially too, it's been so clarifying to see it in its final week now. I don't know, having the residue of all these conversations being had in this space has been really incredible. I wish everyone could have come to all the programs because I feel like you get to see this like beautiful quilt of conversation.
Still, beyond the success of the programming and beyond the quilt of conversation that Kim referenced, you get the sense that the four women behind the Black Art Incubator have a really keen understanding of just how huge it is that not just that the programming is being offered, but that they are the people for Black women who are offering it. Here's Jessica Lynn.
This project would look very different if we were four other different type of people, and that's fine, but it strikes me as being especially profound because it's for self-identified Black women in a moment of many moments where Black women are often devalued, hyper-visible and invisible at the same time. And so I think to be positioning ourselves physically in a storefront in Soho with our names in vinyl, on a window, says something. But I also think to be working collectively from a particular vantage point says a lot, right? That's something that I think has been especially transcendent in this project. And I think folks are grabbing hold to that and supporting it.
And honestly, she's right. Like, the energy of the Black Art Incubator was empowering and it was refreshing. And even just reading the names of four Black women about my age on that downtown Manhattan storefront, it just made me feel good. These women, not totally unlike me, had taken a prestigious artistic residency located in one of the world's biggest cultural centers, and they turned it into a living, breathing community space dedicated to the education and survival of an entire community of Black artists. As a Black artist, it's not just enough to be talented and creative. You also have to be savvy. You have to be a good communicator, and there's definitely pressure to be well-connected. Being a young Black artist is challenging, but seeing so many young artists hammer out their ideas and inspire each other in real time, you know, it reminded me that despite the struggle, Black creativity is worth it. There's one more lesson that I took away from our trip to the Black Art Incubator, and it is made no more clear than in this reflection from Jessica Bell Brown.
We're doing the damn thing, and we should honor that and honor ourselves and you know, be emboldened by that, because no one else is, or you can't wait until for someone else to do the thing that you've always wanted to do. So just do it and take shit later.
That's good. No, that is.
Make your own table.
To learn more about the Black Art Incubator, go to recessart.org/Black Art Incubator.
And special thanks to Annie Rose Strasser for helping us edit this week's show.
To support For Colored Nerds,
you can give to us on Patreon.
Patreon.
At patreon.com/forcolorednerds.
Or you can leave us a little rating and a little review on iTunes. 5 stars only. 5 stars, 5 stars, 5 stars. It helps people find the show, and it really lets everybody know how fucking on point we are.
Yes. Very popping.
Yes. Very well, popping.
Thank you for listening to this week's show, and we'll be back soon. Bye. Oh, I was in sync
that
time.
That's weird. That's so weird. Okay. Goodbye.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.